Hello and welcome to the Zero to Finals podcast. My name is Tom, and in this episode, I'm going to be talking to you about chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, or COPD. If you want to follow along with written notes on this topic, you can follow along at zerotofinals.com/COPD or in the respiratory section of the Zero to Finals medicine book. So let's get straight into it. Chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, or COPD, is a non-reversible, long-term deterioration in airflow through the lungs, which is caused by damage to the lung tissue. This lung damage is almost always the result of smoking, and the damage to the lung tissue causes an obstruction of flow of air through the airways, which makes it more difficult to ventilate the lungs and makes them very prone to developing infections. Unlike asthma, the obstruction of flow of air through the airways is not significantly reversible with bronchodilators, such as salbutamol. Patients are susceptible to what we call exacerbations of COPD, during which there's a worsening of their lung function. And exacerbations are often triggered by infections, and these are called infective exacerbations of COPD. So what's the presentation? We should suspect COPD in a long-term smoker who's presenting with chronic shortness of breath, chronic cough, production of sputum, wheeze, and recurrent respiratory tract infections, particularly in winter. And always consider the differential diagnoses of lung cancer, pulmonary fibrosis, or heart failure, as these also affect this type of person with a similar presentation. It's important to remember that COPD does not cause finger clubbing, and it's unusual for COPD to cause hemoptysis or coughing up blood, and it doesn't usually cause chest pain, so these symptoms should alert you to a possible different diagnosis. Let's talk about the Medical Research Council, or MRC's, dyspnea scale. And this is a 5-point scale that NICE recommend using to assess the impact of the breathlessness on patients' quality of life. So there's 5 grades of breathlessness. Grade 1 is when people become breathless on strenuous activity. Grade 2 is breathlessness on walking up a hill. Grade 3 is when their breathlessness slows their walking on a flat surface. Grade 4 is when they have to stop to catch their breath after walking roughly 100 meters on the flat. And grade 5 is when they're unable to leave the house due to their breathlessness. So how do you make a diagnosis of COPD? Well, diagnosis is based on a combination of clinical presentation plus findings from spirometry. And spirometry is lung function tests, and in COPD, they'll show an obstructive picture. This means that the overall lung capacity is not as bad as their ability to blow air out of their lungs. So the chronic obstruction of their airways slows the movement of air out of their lungs. The overall lung capacity can be measured by forced vital capacity, or FVC, and their ability to quickly blow air out of their lungs is measured by the forced expiratory volume in 1 second, or FEV1. Being able to blow air out of their lungs, like we said, is limited by the obstruction to their airways. So in COPD, the FEV1 to FVC ratio is less than 0.7. So this means that the FEV1 is disproportionately smaller than the FVC. The obstructive picture does not show a dramatic response to reversibility testing with beta-2 agonists like salbutamol during the spirometry testing. If there's a large response to salbutamol, then you need to consider an alternative diagnosis of asthma, because this is a reversible obstruction, whereas in COPD there is a permanent obstruction. So how do we define the severity of the COPD? Well, the overall severity of the airflow obstruction can be graded using the FEV1 measurement. So stage 1 would be an FEV1 of more than 80% of predicted. Stage 2 would be an FEV1 of 50 to 79% of predicted. Stage 3 would be an FEV1 of 30 to 49% of predicted. And at stage 4 would be an FEV1 of less than 30% of predicted. What other investigations can you do? There's a number of other investigations that can be considered to be helpful in diagnosis and management and to exclude other conditions. A chest x-ray can be helpful to exclude other pathologies like lung cancer. A full blood count might show polycythemia or anemia. Polycythemia is a raised hemoglobin, and this is a result of chronic hypoxia. Body mass index, or BMI, is useful as a baseline to later assess whether they have weight loss due to cancer or severe COPD, or weight gain due to steroids. Sputum culture can be used to assess chronic infections and for bugs like Pseudomonas that can colonize the lungs in patients with chronic lung disease. An ECG and echocardiogram can be used to assess the heart function. CT of the thorax can be used to look for an alternative diagnosis like fibrosis, cancer, or bronchiectasis. The serum alpha-1 antitrypsin level can be used to look for alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency, and deficiency of this enzyme leads to earlier onset and more severe COPD disease. And a measurement called transfer factor for carbon monoxide, or TLCO, is decreased in COPD. And this gives an indication about the severity of the disease, and it may be increased in other conditions like asthma. Next, let's talk about the long-term management of COPD. Now, the first thing you need to educate people with COPD about is it's essential for them to stop smoking. If they continue smoking, the disease will progressively worsen and their lung function and prognosis will be worse. They can be referred to smoking cessation services to help support them stopping. All patients should have the pneumococcal and annual flu jab to protect them from infections. And then we get on to the medical management of COPD. Step one is to prescribe a short-acting bronchodilator, and this could be a beta-2 agonist like salbutamol or terbutaline, or it could be a short-acting antimuscarinic inhaler like ipratropium bromide. Step two depends on whether they have asthmatic or steroid-responsive features. And if they do not have asthmatic or steroid-responsive features, they should be started on a combined long-acting beta agonist plus a long-acting muscarinic antagonist, so a LABA and a LAMA. And these are combination inhalers that work to keep the airways open throughout the day. And some examples of these combination inhalers are Anoro Ellipta, Ultibro Breezhaler, and Duraclear Genuair. If they do have asthmatic or steroid responsive features, they should be started on a combination long-acting beta agonist or a LABA plus an inhaled corticosteroid. Some examples of these combination inhalers are Fostair, Symbicort, and Seretide. If these don't work, then they can be stepped up to a combination of a LABA, a LAMA, and an inhaled corticosteroid. And some examples of these triple combination inhalers are Trimbo and Trelegy Ellipta. In more severe cases, additional options are possible. These include nebulizers, so you can nebulize salbutamol or ipratropium, oral theophylline, oral mucolytic therapy, which is used to break down sputum and soften it up to help them clear the sputum. And this is things like carbocysteine. They can take long-term prophylactic antibiotics if they're very prone to chest infections, and azithromycin is a common choice. And then in severe disease, they can have an assessment for whether they need long-term oxygen therapy to take at home. And long-term oxygen therapy is used for severe COPD that's causing problems like chronic hypoxia, polycythemia, cyanosis, or heart failure, secondary to pulmonary hypertension. Obviously, you can't use long-term oxygen therapy if they continue to smoke, because oxygen in cigarettes is a significant fire hazard. Next, let's talk about an exacerbation of COPD. An exacerbation of COPD presents as a worsening of symptoms such as cough, shortness of breath, sputum production, and wheeze, and it's usually triggered by a viral or a bacterial infection. Arterial blood gases are an essential part of managing an exacerbation of COPD when they end up in hospital, so you need to know how to interpret blood gas results. To make this more simple, just remember that CO2 makes blood acidotic by breaking down into carbonic acid. So a low pH, which means an acidosis, with a raised PCO2 indicates that they're acutely retaining more CO2 and their blood has become acidotic. So the obstruction to airflow out of the lungs means that CO2 remains in their lungs and in their body, and this CO2 makes the blood acidotic. And this is called a respiratory acidosis. If you find a raised bicarbonate on their ABG result, this indicates that they chronically retain CO2. And the response to the chronically raised CO2 is that their kidneys have started to respond by producing bicarbonate. And this bicarbonate is used to balance the acidotic CO2 and maintain a normal pH. So in an acute exacerbation, the kidneys can't keep up with the rising level of CO2, so they become more acidotic despite having a higher bicarbonate than someone who doesn't have COPD. When you see somebody with COPD in the hospital, it's really important to distinguish the type of respiratory failure. A low PO2, or a low oxygen level in the blood, indicates that they're hypoxic. And when somebody's hypoxic, they have respiratory failure. If they have a normal PCO2 and a low PO2, this indicates type 1 respiratory failure. And you can remember that only one is affected. When they have a raised PCO2 and a low PO2, this indicates a type 2 respiratory failure. And you can remember that two are affected, both the PCO2 and the PO2. And this affects how you manage their oxygen, and we'll talk about that shortly. Other investigations that you can use in an acute exacerbation are a chest X-ray to look for pneumonia or other pathology, an ECG to look for arrhythmias or evidence of heart strain or heart failure, a full blood count to look for infection, which would show up as a raised white cell count. Use an EASE to check for the electrolytes, which can be affected by infections and medications like salbutamol. A sputum culture to look for significant infection, and blood cultures if they're septic. So let's talk about oxygen therapy in somebody who has COPD. If you give too much oxygen to somebody who is prone to retaining CO2, this can depress their respiratory drive. So this slows down their breathing rate and the breathing effort, and it leads them to retain more CO2. Therefore, in somebody who retains CO2, the amount of oxygen that's given needs to be carefully balanced to optimize their PO2 or their oxygen level whilst not increasing their PCO2. And this is guided by their oxygen saturations and repeat ABGs. You can do this using something called a Venturi mask. And these masks are specially designed to deliver a specific percentage of concentration of oxygen. And they allow some of the oxygen to leak out of the side of the mask and normal air to be inhaled along with the oxygen. And this means that the percentage of inhaled oxygen can be carefully controlled to balance how much oxygen they get. Remember that environmental air contains 21% oxygen. And Venturi masks have different attachments that deliver 24% oxygen with a blue mask, 28 with a white mask, 31 with an orange mask, 35 with a yellow mask, 40 with a red mask, and 60 with a green mask. A general rule regarding the target oxygen saturations for somebody with COPD is that if they're not a chronic retainer of CO2 and they're not retaining CO2, aim for the oxygen saturations of 88 to 92% using a Venturi mask. And if they don't retain CO2 and they're not retaining CO2 and their bicarbonate is normal, which indicates that they don't normally retain CO2, then you can give them oxygen to maintain their saturations above 94%. Let's talk about the medical treatment of an exacerbation of COPD. So typical treatment, if they're well enough to remain at home, is prednisolone 30 milligrams once a day for 7 to 14 days, regular inhalers or home nebulizers, and antibiotics if there's evidence of an infection. If they're unwell enough to make it into hospital, then they can be treated with nebulized bronchodilators, so this is nebulized salbutamol or nebulized ipratropium, steroids, which can be given as oral prednisolone 30 to 40 milligrams, or if they're unwell enough, they can have IV hydrocortisone, antibiotics if there's evidence of infection, and physiotherapy can be used to help clear the sputum from their chest. A few other options that can be used in severe cases that are not responding to first-line treatment are things like IV aminophylline, non-invasive ventilation, where they have forceful ventilation using a tight-fitting face mask, intubation, so putting a tube into their trachea and artificially ventilating them, and this requires an admission to the intensive care unit. And there's a medication called doxepram, which can be used as a respiratory stimulant if NIV or intubation is not considered appropriate. Thanks for listening to this episode on COPD. If you found this podcast helpful, please share it with your colleagues so it can help them out with their revision too. And if you want to help me out, I'd love it if you could leave me a rating or review on the iTunes or podcast app that you use. And I hope you tune in for the next episode, which will be on non-invasive ventilation.